Good morning. I was going to talk a little bit. I work with Linda. We're feds. Our only conflict of interest is that we work with you. We work for you. We're civil servants. Our program started in 86, and it's part of the Superfund. NIEHS has actually two parts, a research program and a training program. And our focus is on HAZWOPER, 1910-120, the Hazardous Waste Operations and Emergency Response Standard. And one of the things that we have done over the years is focus on emergency responders and cleanup workers. Those are our two focuses that we've had. So after the World Trade Center, we set up our own emergency support activation plan and have actually had a number of opportunities to actually put it into practice. What I wanted to talk about today are three things, basically, that protecting responders needs to be a national priority, that we need to work on creating a culture of preparedness and resilience. That's one of our focuses. And thirdly, getting public health to the table. And I think each of those three things are key messages that we saw in the BP Gulf oil spill disaster. We developed this paradigm actually after the World Trade Center because one of the traditional things that happens during a disaster is that responders don't think about their own health and they don't think about their own safety. And I'd say that we've done over the last 25 years is to try to change this paradigm so that the period of time, the duration of not thinking about your own health is shortened with each disaster. And I feel like we continue to struggle with that as a nation and in terms of our national response. One of the great things that happened with the BP Gulf oil disaster was that I had the wonderful opportunity to be with David at 6:56 a.m. on May 3rd, that's my Facebook page, at David and Margaret Kitt and myself, NIOSH, OSHA, and NIEHS. We actually met with Mary Landry, actually that first Monday morning, we were at the 6 a.m. briefing at the Unified Command, and I think what was really great about it is for the first time we were able to have health, occupational health, and environmental health being brought to the attention of the people who are in charge of the response. And in some ways, that's really part of the good news is that unlike other disasters, there had not been the opportunity to have worker and environmental health be brought forward so early. That's just a little chart from the actual oil, and that's on also that's May 1st, a little earlier. What we did actually later that day was that we decided that we would try to create a training process for all the responders. And I will admit that I could not imagine what would happen in the next, 2 days. And also, credit to BP for thinking about this in terms of creating an army of responders. And for us, what that meant is to try to figure out what's the best thing that we need to do to protect all these people who have never been emergency responders, who have no idea what OSHA is, who have no idea what PPE is. And so part of what was great was that we actually got to work as a team in terms of developing a health and safety program during the disaster. And again, I would say that's actually an unprecedented process that's happened and something that we don't want to forget about because it doesn't happen often enough. What we all saw, all of us saw, the nature of exposure that was happening across the Gulf Coast, both on the shore, on the near shore, and further out in terms of efforts to corral the oil, pick up the tar balls, et cetera. And for us, this created a process back to the hierarchy of controls in terms of thinking about a job hazard analysis process that would at least attempt to limit the exposure. And I guess we'll find out from Dale or other researchers in the decades to come what the nature of that exposure may have been, but I know our goal on day one was to limit that exposure as much as possible. What we did together was we created a base four-hour course that everybody had to have who was part of the response, and we actually had in the neighborhood of about 150,000 people who went through that course. Earlier, actually, at the World Trade Center, we did a course that we did for 7,000 people. And as David was mentioning, during Katrina, we did a base Katrina course that we did for 35,000 people. So we've sort of had this upward trajectory from 7,000 to 35,000 to 150,000. As we try to think about how to have an early intervention from a public health point of view, in terms of the people who are the most exposed and most impacted, sort of the canaries in the situation. The other thing that we did was rolled out our 40-hour HazWhopper. That's the cleanup worker course for the people who are most exposed and most impacted. And one of the things that we negotiated, I guess I would say, with BP and the Coast Guard, is that anybody who was in a team would have a HazWhopper person to be part of that team, a person who actually knew in detail about health and safety operations. And then the other thing is that we did booklets that were kind of key. This is kind of the paradigm that we used when we thought about training in the normal way that we develop educational materials and do a training intervention. JHA, job hazard analysis, are very key. Site characterization, and I guess the one thing I might say about this is that, you know, it was very difficult to get good data early on in terms of exposure, and of course in terms of who the exposed population was. So we know that even in the training intervention, that's an important thing that we need to have very early on. And in this case, we tried to do the best we could. But I will say that in our, terms of our materials, which were available to anybody on the web, we changed them almost on a daily basis, given whatever we learned each day in terms of potential exposure. So one of the things that we did in partnership with OSHA was basically create I'm a web person, so, you know, this is old-fashioned to think about that you actually have a piece of paper that you put in your pocket. So we went retro and created booklets that actually condensed all of our information down into a small booklet that people could have after their training. And with that, we did thousands of them. This is sort of a little sense of how we rolled out the training process. For the most part, we had either churches, many places we had tents where these four-hour courses would be done by our hazmat trainers. And of course, you can imagine the difficulties of trying to do this in a very hot, chaotic, you know, difficult environment. But that was what we thought was important for people to do. And of course, the core group that we had there, that was in Venice, was the VOO program, the Vessels of Opportunity. And then that launched us onto a whole nother activity in terms of who the fishermen were. And for us, kind of how we would get these kind of key health and safety messages in Spanish, in Vietnamese, in Cajun, and kind of simplify core public health messages so that they could be understandable to folks who had never been put in a situation like this. So that was kind of what we had distilled down. And then what we also then did was that we took all of our materials. We decided we'd do a Vietnamese, Spanish, and English to be able to distribute to frontline responders in all of the Gulf states. And those turned out to be very useful to people to be able to have in their pockets as they did their work. And with each of those, you know, what we really tried to do was make sure that we had a pictorial depiction of what we're trying to say with short messages. So, for example, the cleanup books were actually almost 100 pages long, but each sort of series of pages had either a public health message or a public health image. And this is, again, just a picture of DECON going on at Venice. And actually, these are very well protected workers that were there, and that was kind of the, I guess they call it the ground zero of the oil spill response. What then we did, actually we did this in May of 2011. We decided that we would bring together everybody that we had worked with, from the Vietnamese fishing communities to federal agencies to state public health people, to actually our partners from BP, that all came together to kind of look at what we thought were the core issues that we saw from the response. And actually, this information is available on our website, niehs.nih.gov. And what we actually had three separate sections that we had: one on our core training development, second, we thought community engagement involvement was important, and third, in terms of monitoring and surveillance. So I guess for us, you know, what was really striking, and this has always been a core part of what we do, is that a lot of times we think that we can translate material and that's enough. And we know from everything that we've done that there's no way that that's enough. And so what's been good is that we've had ongoing partnerships with organizations like the Boat People, SOS, and others, where we know we need to create an infrastructure within that organization of peer trainers to be able to get back to that original question about building a safety culture and a culture of resilience. And that's something that we have ongoing. Again, that the other ironic thing was that David Michaels, head of OSHA, had actually issued a policy memo on the right to understand, and a couple of days, actually, I guess 2 days before the oil disaster happened. And what's really interesting about that is that we've had HAZCOM, for many years since Love Canal, the requirement to train people in hazardous materials that they work with. But what was important, for the first time, there was actually a federal policy about the right to understand, meaning that we want people to actually understand what they're being taught, not that they're just having information thrown at them. So that was kind of a key part of our response, and something that we know that we're going to carry forward from this disaster and also in our daily work. The other thing that I was really struck by, and Maureen's very familiar with this, that how we bring the public health community to the table is very important. And I feel like in many ways the public health community was not at the table early on well enough in a way that it should be. Linda touched on the issue about bringing researchers to the table early on to be able to have that opportunity. I remember trying to have the public health director of Louisiana to come into the incident command center, and that was very difficult to have that happen. So again, I think we're looking at these questions about how do we bring public health and community involvement into basically a federal national response early on. And the last thing I wanted to say was, one of the things that the training process did was create a registry of all the people who were part of the response. And we decided as part of the training that we would make sure we collected data on everybody who was trained. And I think that's something we didn't do in the World Trade Center. We actually didn't do it in Katrina, but we did do it here. And hopefully, that can be the basis for good research and work that can go on into the future. Lastly, I just wanted to reiterate this need to have a surveillance and research base at the local community, with the local public health infrastructure, and that is like very important. And I'll say, for us from the responder point of view, mental health and critical incident stress management has emerged as a giant issue, as it did at the World Trade Center, as it did at Katrina, and that's something that we're still in the middle of addressing with SAMHSA and with other partners in terms of how can we create an actual resilient and prepared response workforce. And that's something that we're continuing to work on. What we've done over time is, of course, we've done many scenarios. We've never done an earthquake blizzard, but maybe we'll work on that this afternoon as a scenario that's important. But we've tried to build materials for responders on a broad swath of disasters. So anyway, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.